The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. The Pharisees went off and plotted how they might entrap Jesus in speech. They sent their disciples to him with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are a truthful man and that you teach the way of God in accordance with the truth. And you're not concerned with anyone's opinion, for you do not regard a person's status. Tell us then, what is your opinion? Is it lawful to pay the census tax to Caesar or not?" Knowing their malice, Jesus said, "Why are you testing me, you hypocrites? Show me the coin that pays the census tax." Then they handed him the Roman coin. He said to them, "Whose image is this and whose inscription?" They replied, "Caesar's." At that he said to them, "Then repay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar, and to God what belongs to God." The Gospel of the Lord. So it's World Series time, right? Good time to quote from that great American philosopher, Yogi Berra. "Before I say anything, I'd like to tell you something." This gospel is often used as a model for the separation of church from civil politics. That's not what it's about. Not even close. Well, kind of close. What we have today is an example of the Pharisees getting it wrong yet again. You'd think they would have learned by now, yes? For the last several weeks, we've been reading Gospels where the Pharisees have been verbally vanquished by Jesus very handily. But they come after him again today, and they think they have a very clever trap. Now, I want you to notice that this trap consists of two very unlikely teams of tricksters, the Pharisees and the Herodians together. You probably all remember the Pharisees are this group of hyper-observant Jews, generally presenting themselves as fiercely loyal to both the religious practice of their people and to their national autonomy. The Herodians, on the other hand, are Jewish collaborators with the Roman occupiers. They're all about being on the winning side. Their loyalty is to profit and power, and that's pretty much it. You'd think the two groups wouldn't get along, but they do have a common enemy in Jesus, this most uncommon teacher. There's also in the text, I think, a subtle sign of the arrogance of the Pharisees. Note that the text says they sent their disciples to Jesus. They didn't go themselves. Maybe they wanted to stay away from the taint of being seen with the Herodians. Maybe they were just afraid of getting bested by Jesus in person again. So the minions of the Pharisees encounter Jesus and lay on this most insincere flattery. "We know you are a truthful man." But they don't stop there. They don't know when to shut up. They go on to acknowledge to Jesus that he teaches the way of God and does not regard a person's status. Translated into today's language, we could say, "Hey, Jesus, how come you're not listening to us? We're the rich and the powerful ones. Instead, you're taking care of the outcasts and the marginalized. You're not playing by our rules." Right there, these would-be tricksters have given away their self-serving purpose. But then they ask what they think is this inescapable trap of a question. Is it okay to pay Caesar's tax? You see, if Jesus says, sure, pay the tax, the Pharisees, the self-righteous Jews, can call him a traitor to his people. If he says no, the Herodians, the collaborators with the Romans, can accuse him of being a revolutionary defying the empire. So what to do? If Jesus were merely a manipulative politician type, he might try to divert attention from the question. Maybe he'd just insult the questioner. Perhaps you've seen that happen a time or two. But instead of dodging the question, Jesus goes beyond the surface politics right to the heart of the issue. He asks to see the coin used to pay the tax. And by the way, Roman law required that this tax be paid with Roman money. One of the Pharisees' group quickly produces the coin. And that is a little detail that often goes by unnoticed. Here's one of the apparently loyal Jews who is obviously carrying the Roman money. And that coin bears the face of Caesar. Jewish law prohibits that kind of image. And the coin has an inscription on it. The text doesn't tell us what it says, but scholars do. You see, that inscription proclaims Caesar to be the son of a god. It's kind of a double dose of this arrogance of the powerful. Remember, too, that this coin is like all money, all through the ages, all currency, throughout time, except maybe for gold and silver coins, I suppose. That is, using the coin is itself an act of faith in something or someone. The coin has no intrinsic value, but that makes possessing it an act of trust that the backer of the coin will ultimately honor its assigned value. That coin originates from Caesar. Caesar is the guarantor of its value. The coin is worthy of trust only to the extent that Caesar is worthy of trust. But that's still not the end of the issue. When it comes to the question of who is owed what, we need to look, Jesus tells us, at the totality of our life. When Jesus utters his judgment, repay to Caesar what belongs to Caesar and to God what belongs to God, he's not merely going beyond the political argument. He's pointing out the difference between the temporary and the eternal, that which decays and that which remains, between the trivial and the essential. He's contrasting here the power of violence and economic oppression in this world with the power of unfailing divine love and mercy. And for thoughtful listeners like us, that leaves a few questions that we're supposed to answer, like, what of true value does not belong to God? The coin bears the image of Caesar. It is created with the image of Caesar. In whose image are you created? How much of our lives do we spend in pursuit of Caesar's economy, and how much of our lives are spent in pursuit of God's economy of salvation? And does your answer to that last question leave you hopeful or a little fearful? You might have heard it said that we all have two documents that provide the most accurate demonstration of what or who we love the most: our calendars and our bank statements. Nervous laughter fills out the pause. It's only a coincidence that we have a capital campaign going, but keep that in mind. I would offer you one final question. It's a good one to carry with you in the communion line. What can I change this week in my calendar, in my bank statement, this week to be more fully who it is that I am called to be.